and welcome to Controversial Figures post-episode interview after episode one of Edward Snowden. My name is Tammy Hawkins, and I hope if you enjoy this podcast, you'll leave a five-star rating and comment on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe.
Ah, on point.
You have to say it 10 times, I think.
That was good. Well. That was good. Visit Controversial Figures on Patreon. Donate anything that you can. I am so thankful. The first episode, can I tell you, it has been out for 3-4 days, and we've already had over 70 downloads, and I'm absolutely delighted with the support. So thank you to everyone that has donated, that has downloaded, that's liked or commented. It sincerely means the world to me. So with that...
Talking to 70 people here, huh?
At least. Hopefully more by the time this drops.
Exactly.
I'd love to introduce my friend here that is on the podcast with me, Ben Ricker. Could I ask you to introduce yourself?
Hello. Ben Ricker is the name. I work with Tammy before and read about her starting the podcast, and Edward Snowden was her first subject, and Edward Snowden has been kind of a... something that I've been following very closely. It kind of fits in my wheelhouse of interest. The surveillance state, politics, morality, a lot of stuff intertwined in one very controversial, but I think heroic figure of Edward Snowden. Let me just give you a background first. Been working in IT since in the early 80s. I was messing around with computers. My dad was dialed into work when those, you'd have those phone couplings where you'd put the phone in, the two-sided phone into the sockets, and it would dial up the modem. And that's how I used to, I started out war dialing in the 80s and getting on. Basically, the web was basically all dark web. You just dial numbers until you'd hit a phone that was a modem, and then you'd lay it down, then you'd try to log into it, see what you could figure out.
The good old days. For some of our younger fans, it kind of sounded like, boop, 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 especially when you got to like the modem days. I still miss those sounds that I tried to sneak very late at night while I was doing nefarious things.
Yeah, I have one of my ringtones is that sound, so I hear it a lot.
I've got to ask, have you read Ghost in the Wires by Kevin Mitnick?
No, I haven't, but I'm familiar with Mitnick. Obviously, his reputation precedes him. He's a really good social engineer. Yeah. I think is his real big talent.
Oh, absolutely.
He can talk people into giving them the whole works, and that's how he got everything. I mean, he did a lot of freaking too.
Yeah,
it used to be really easy. All you have to do is play back the tones that you would hear when you push the buttons, and it would dial. You had to have a code. You had to figure out a code ahead of time, but that was really easy to crack because they were very, I think, about 4 digits. So you could basically make long distance phone calls for free using those tone dialers. And then you could also war dial those tone dialers, and then build your database of phone numbers that you could then try to hack. Or they were just BBSs, which were just a bunch of kind of pre-internet ways of communicating. You could do chat.
Yeah, bulletin board days.
With people. Bulletin board days. Yeah, exactly. So I started out in that, and I got into security in about 2000. it was all by necessity, so I had to learn a lot in a short period of time to try to secure a network that was really on the internet the whole time. I've been in security for now since 2000. So, and the other thing is I have a philosophy degree. So the two kind of coincide in my mind, and I apply them to certain things that I'm interested in, including Edward Snowden.
Yeah, there's definitely the philosophical debate there. I have feelings. I tried to abstract my feelings from the episodes of the podcast. I try not to display my feelings too much one way or another.
I thought it was balanced.
I tried. I think, we all have our unconscious bias, even when we're trying not to be biased. But, I did pose a question at one point in the podcast, and I think that's what kicked off you and I kind of chatting about this episode in particular. At one point, I asked, is he a devil or an angel? And, you know, I'd love your reflection on that with your philosophical background and your deep security background, which I can't tell the audience enough about how impressive you are at security. I'm not going to say where we work together. I'm not going to say what we did together, but I'm going to say this man knows his stuff. So I would love to hear your reflection.
So So the question was, you know, what do we make of Edward Snowden? So let me start by saying that in moral philosophy, there's you know, people talk about how philosophy, you know, doesn't make progress, blah blah blah. But there definitely is progress in moral philosophy, and I think there's a couple of pretty much, I mean, you know, it's agreement among our consensus among philosophers, just as, you know, not necessarily all philosophers, but most of them agree that when that we are moral agents, that we have a certain authenticity, and in a sense, a no one can tell us what we can value in the end. And what we value is what is important to us. And Edward Snowden, whatever you think about what he says, and he is one of the most clear thinkers, concise. Well, he's not so concise. Sometimes he goes off on tangents, but he defends himself better than anybody. So I'm sort of just adding a few little additions to the way he talks about himself and what his motivations are. And his motivations are very important. We'll get back to that, I think, in later. But So Jean-Paul Sartre, philosopher, French philosopher, existentialist, if you're familiar with that sort of thing, had this notion that he asked this question. He said, so imagine World War One. You have the choice of going to war in World War One, or besides what you think about World War One, and or feeding your family. And Sartre said there really is no right answer except the answer that the person gives in an authentic way. That is, they have reasons to do what they do. They value, and their value is universalizable in their situation. That is, anybody who's in the same situation should probably do the same thing. They, you know, their reasons are relatively justified. I mean, you know how our reasons can be up in the air sometimes and wishy-washy, but if they're sincerely held, there's not much more you can say. And Edward Snowden, I think, fits that in his, especially in, if you listen to interviews, he has very clear reasons why he did what he did. One, he was right that it was illegal what was being done. And I have an anecdote to tell about this, actually. I worked downtown St. Louis in what was known as Level 3. I don't know if you know about the NSPs, the big, the backbone network of the internet is run by a half a dozen companies. And in St. Louis, probably the entire breadbasket of the United States goes through St. Louis to Chicago. But there was a room where all the fiber would come in and go into, and then it would go out. And the room was this giant metal box with a highly secure biometric locked door. And every once in a while, a guy in a suit would come in with a briefcase, and he'd go into it and go out. And I was like, what the hell is this guy doing? He comes in, he's out in like a half hour. He said, oh, he's just picking up the backups of the internet. I'm like, what do you mean the backups of the internet?
Well, that's terrifying.
That's the SCIF room, basically, where all of the internet traffic through St. Louis goes through this one room into whatever bank of hard drives that are then this guy backs up and takes to wherever he's going. And that's when I first got an inkling that there's something going on here that was very strange. And as Edward Snowden revealed, it was a lot deeper and a lot worse than we thought. Every single email, every single text, every single phone call that is made between any human being on the planet was basically being transcribed and archived in the NSA and the CIA and given access by the intelligence agencies. And Edward Snowden knew this because, and this is where it gets wishy-washy, kind of, in the sense that he had the clearance that, because he was basically a sysadmin, he could see everything, all data, anytime, any search engine he could use. And he started figuring out that they were not only were they having all this data, they were keeping it for long periods of time. He could also see all the searches that were being done, people, you know, looking up their girlfriends and their exes. And, you know, he was just, it was really out of control. And he went through the chain of command in the, you know, in the intelligence agencies and his direct reports to say, hey, you know, this is something wrong here. And he was right. And it was illegal. So I think from my mind, it's QED for Edward Snowden. His objections were not being heard. They were not being even, no one was listening to him. And he was very careful to give it to specific journalists with the, there's a promise, but the promise that they would not reveal any information that would endanger any human beings. And the United States government has never said that Edward Snowden has endangered one human being, one asset. He just provided the technical detail of what they were doing. It also, and it, the reason why he released it, if you recall, and you mentioned in your podcast, was Clapper, the head of the National Intelligence Agency, lied to Congress about the gathering that they were doing. Admitted he lied later on because of the Snowden release. So at least it revealed on the bottom that the intelligence community was not trustworthy. And obviously their actions were illegal. And he felt he had no choice but to blow the whistle. And he has paid dearly for it, I would say. I don't know what punishment a man deserves, but you know, he was in the airport for almost 40 days because they took his passport. The United States went out of their way to make sure that no country would take him without threat of the United States doing all kinds of things. And it was only Russia who stepped forward and let him in the country. And he has been there, I think, 7 years now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And yeah. I, you know, there's part of me, you and I have both worked in sensitive industries. We've signed non-disclosure agreements. We've, you know, known things that we can't tell others in our industries. And yeah. I do respect that deeply. I also respect my morality deeply. And that's where this conversation is so difficult for me. You know, absolutely, you're correct in saying that the government, you know, makes this blasé statement of he put folks in grave danger, but doesn't quantify what that danger was or give example. Now, I'm going to say that on one side of my mouth, I'm going to say on the other side of my mouth, maybe they cannot for confidentiality reasons, for other secrets that could risk. I don't know.
Believe me, the United States government would have put that up a flagpole if they could prove or show that he had endangered the lives of agents. And if you look at you can view the Snowden documents. There's not one piece of information that mentions one human being on the face
of the planet. And if you know what he stole leveraged, however you want to put it, versus what he actually released, it was infinitesimal.
And he
makes a statement that he was very specific in paring down and only releasing that which he knew was lied about in public, and which was a true violation of our freedom. And the fact that our government gave permissions to themselves to do warrantless inspection of us, it just violates the base freedoms that this country was founded on. And it's such a dangerous precipice. We as Americans, we're both originally from America. I lived in Europe for 3 years. When I was in Europe, I had the wonderful fortune of going to an EU cybersecurity conference where I was a speaker, and the featured speaker at the end of the day was Edward Snowden, of course, remotely.
Oh, wow.
via end-to-end encryption, heavy VPN.
On the big screen.
It's rare that I get goosebumps when someone speaks. He gave me goosebumps. And as you said,
he's an arresting speaker.
Yeah.
He does it so well. Go ahead.
Well, and bless him. I mean, what else can he do? He's been locked in a country, in a small part of a country, and frankly, not a friendly country to where he originates from. So you're living in a frenemy land with nowhere else to go and probably very little that you can do aside from the electronic communications that he is allowed. He is in prison.
He is. And the other thing that is important to understand is that the United States government is playing a very dangerous game with this. Not only are they, you know, shutting him out and trying to force him out, they're trying to take all the money from the book that he just wrote, his memoir, I guess. They basically frozen all of his assets.
Yeah.
They also people always say, well, why doesn't he come to serve, have justice served and, you know, extricate himself from the problem? And that is because the Espionage Act in particular, it was 1932, I forget what year it was, might have been earlier, basically does not allow for what they call affirmative defense. You cannot make a defense based upon the motivations behind the actions that you did. So he has always said, you waive the Espionage Act charge, I will come back immediately and we can go to trial. And I will give my case. I will, you know, he'll make his case like he has made it in the media. And a lot of people think that's untoward, but I mean, you got to understand that it's, he has no choice. It also was used against several other whistleblowers. One gentleman, I forget his name, we can put it in the, there's a really good documentary. I'll send you the link about Snowden and the whole process he used, when he gave over the information. It was all filmed as it was happening.
And yeah, I've watched that documentary.
Citizen Four.
Oh, it's so good.
Very good. We should put a link to that because I think that's a good, and it also goes into the other whistleblowers. And there was, in fact, one, and you know, problem that Snowden called out is a technology problem. People have access. You can basically go into these search engines and search through everything by keyword. And there are no safeguards against it, except for maybe, you know, whether you need to know. And there was a, of course, I mean, this is something that screams out, hey, we could have a technology fix for this. Why don't we just, you know, subjugate, encapsulate the data so you only have access to certain data over certain times, gets rolled off, the search engines are attenuated, all that stuff. He wrote all it up and gave it to the intelligence agencies, and they chucked it in the trash can, said, no, we don't need that. And also, we're going to charge you with the Espionage Act for after he blew the whistle on the fact that they are basically were allowing unauthenticated searches through all the databases that the intelligence agency had to a lot of agencies and a lot of agents in those agencies. He also got charged with the Espionage Act. His entire family broken up. They raided his house 10, 12 times. It was just, it was harassment, and he has no defense to it. So
it's just, extremely
it's reprehensible.
Clear. Yeah. It's clear he was made an example of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And Snowden would be made an example of as well if he ever came to the public. I understand his point. He's living with his girlfriend in Moscow somewhere. So yeah. So that's sort of my, 10 cent philosopher rundown of why Edward Snowden is an angel.
I appreciate that. And you know, I tend to lean that way if that wasn't transparent throughout this conversation.
Besides, you know, the patriotic thing, the thing it's against the law, I really haven't heard anybody come up with a really justified objection to what he's done. So I do want to go back. Let me go back real quick to the point about, you know, the oath that he took and not to reveal information. You and I are under the same sort of obligations as him. I've never been put in a position where my moral standards were anywhere near being tripped because of an action I was supposed to cover up. I played loose with the truth. You know, you don't ask me a direct question, I won't give you a direct answer. But I've never lied. I've never been forced or even coerced, even thought there was a reason why I would lie. There was no situation I ever got into where I would have to, you know, abrogate my responsibility to myself to do what I think is right, which I think, you know, speaks volumes about the company we work for. But also just in general, that's the way it should work. I mean, asking people to do things that is wrong is just wrong itself. And that's what, and I also would say that the whistleblower defense is something that has lost favor in the U.S., and it's sad.
I recognize the damage that happened after this was acknowledged in public, right? We obviously had GDPR. We had lots of on-soil requirements coming from countries through a variety of different industries. You know, really this push of nationalization and this push away from globalization, which I think is a really interesting time in our country. As we reflect on what we're enduring at current through the global pandemic and the nationalism that's also being stoked through that. It's a fascinating time. It's a fascinating time to be alive. And I think we stand on a fine precipice of freedom and justification of infringing upon freedom under the guise of protection. And it makes me extremely uncomfortable. It really does. And it makes me so sad for our country as well. I wish that we could negotiate with someone like Snowden. And as you suggested earlier, imagine what he would bring back with him, that we could improve from a governmental perspective, that we could improve from an overall diplomatic perspective, because the man is actually quite diplomatic, approaches and his moralities and why he's done what he's done. That makes me the saddest of the situation, aside from the fact that the man's entire life has been destroyed. But I do respect the global impact that this revolution caused, and that angered a lot of politicians, have a lot of control.
And in the end, this is what he wanted. I mean, it necessarily wasn't everything he wanted, but it was definitely something he wanted. GDPR is one of the standouts, I think. The United States, I think, is woefully behind still.
Yeah, except for CCPA, California, you know.
Yeah, except for California, but that's California.
We're different.
I mean, you know, so it's unfortunate. And the bottom line is, it's still happening. It's worse now because of cell phones. Cell phones are, as Edward Snowden has pointed out and technically shown a lot of good information about that, is they're data sieves. They're owned by large corporations, which do it merely to sell your data to someone else.
We've consistently traded off privacy for convenience in this country and around the world, let's be honest, but certainly in America.
But a cell phone adds a nice little location off a cell tower and a nice little unique identifier for you, so we know everything you do, where you go, you know, and, you know, it's in the guise of, you know, giving you better ads. And and Snowden asked the right questions. What have we given up? And unfortunately, I don't think that we cannot answer that question, because it's already answered for us. And that's what I think is the tragedy in a democracy. Hopefully things will change slowly. They seem to be changing slowly. The GDPR is forcing the U.S. to face that as well, because besides the on-soil problem, where now if we put it on, like, say, European soil, then we don't have to bring the GDPR to the U.S. We can just do it in Europe, and that'll feed Europe and maybe California. California helps, because California forces everyone to basically do what they say, because they're so big and they have the largest economy in the United States. And, you know, you want to deal with California, you got to deal with their laws. Mm-hmm. The nationalist part, that is a very strange thing. It actually makes it worse, because you're in the hands of whatever government that happens to be there. And let's face it, the United States is not the worst in the world by any stretch of the imagination.
And thank you. I think that should be recognized.
Yes. It's not the best, but it's certainly not the worst. And those countries want that data on their soil, I think, a lot, because they also want to get the same access. When you push it to the United States, it kind of stays in that country for a very short period of time. Then it gets pushed somewhere else, and then they no longer have access to it unless they come to the United States to buy it or whatever. So I think that may be more of the reason behind the data. I mean, some of it is to protect it, but to keep it on soil without actually requiring any other sorts of data protections doesn't seem to be a anything but serving the government itself to get that access to that. But I don't know. That's my controversial opinion. I don't know if that's that's a motivation behind the minds of governments. Who knows?
Yeah, and GDPR wasn't, you know, entirely spurred by Edward Snowden by any means either.
The MI6 got popped too. So
you've had a different breach every hour. If anybody watches security news, our data. I don't know about you, but if I go to Pwned, you got Pwned. Yeah. My data has been breached a stupid amount of times, and I'm careful with my data.
I know. I've got about 6 or 7 that I've counted the last. Some of the breaches were a good 10 years ago plus, but still, I don't have the same passwords that I had 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago, or even, I don't know, Well, I won't tell you how long it's
been. And what does your password start with? Don't mind the writing.
Actually, I'm a Mac person, and I use the passwords. It's wonderful. It suggests these long passwords that I don't even have to begin to memorize, and it automatically fills in the blanks by the site you're on. I manage my passwords that way, so I'm actually golden. Two-factor authentication, folks.
For the win.
If it's there, use it. That's Preach. Absolutely a case, yeah. and change your password. I see another person with the same router password as the one that's on their router. You know, I'm like, oh, you need to change your router password first. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. As no always, riveting conversation. Really, nice. Really appreciate you spending some time with me. Thank you so much for your support of the podcast. I can't tell you enough.
I still need to join the Patreon. I'm sorry. I will do that.
That's okay. Too long. That's okay. You and everybody else starve. Listening to this.
So you can get dog food. And of course, we want to hear from you in the comments, because that's what this is all about. We're engaging with the internet.
We got to do something while we're all stuck at home.
Yes, exactly. Like, subscribe, hit that button, smash that button.
Oh, please.
And thank you very much.